Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and are we lucky, is Casey Seiler, state editor for the Albany Times Union and one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Welcome back, Casey.
Alan, good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, let's get started. Dean Skelos, convicted. Everybody's talking ethics. Sort of do a little trot around the baseball field for us. Talk about your mixed metaphors and tell us who's on first.
Exactly. there you go. Yeah, see, I know my comedy history. But in terms of, I mean, we are living at the end of an historic year in New York State history. Never before have two sitting legislative leaders been arrested, fallen from power, and now in back-to-back jury decisions been convicted of corruption in cases that bear eerie similarities, and in a couple of cases, the same dramatis personae to each other. It's amazing. And now many, many fingers that are at the end of hands that belong to many editorial boards as well as advocates are pointing at the governor as the person who the zap is on to get a real fundamental as opposed to piecemeal ethics reform legislation passed in the next legislative session.
Now, there's the rumor issues in Albany are terrible, because everybody wants to know whether the governor will be the third man in the room. There's not a scintilla of real evidence.
You mean the third man in the room to face arrest.
Yes, that's right. We heard from Preet Bharara, who tweeted at one point that there's more to come, basically said.
He did not exactly do that. You're referring to a tweet that he put out just as the Skelos jury was beginning its second day.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, no, I take that back. It was on Thursday. It was as the governor was speaking
right.
at the Regional Economic Development Council award show, about 15 minutes into the governor's remarks. Preet Bharara put out his first tweet on an account that he had created a couple of days previous.
And he says it's his first tweet, right?
First tweet, as alleged. It was playful.
And
as alleged,
says,
this is my
tuned.
First tweet. And then he said, stay tuned. What he has said subsequently is, when he said stay tuned, it was stay tuned for more of my delightful tweets, not stay tuned for more in the way of state government leadership indictments. But of course, it was hard not to miss the potential double meeting there, as well as the timing of the fact that he was putting out this tweet at a time when every member of the Capitol Press Corps was glued to, you know, their computers, specifically to TweetDeck, because we were all live tweeting the Regional Economic Development Grant, you know, handout award show. And it was very, very interesting and certainly remarked upon by many people.
Now, Casey Seiler, do you remember the end of Miracle on 34th Street, the great film? And they go in, a little girl leads them into the house. And, you know, this is accidental, but there is the
cane.
Santa Claus's cane.
Yes.
Remember that?
Kris Kringle's cane, let's be specific.
Kris Kringle, who was really Santa Claus, don't you know?
It's still open argument.
It's a matter of interpretation.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe I'm not such a good lawyer, says the hero, to get him off. And then he says, maybe. And I keep thinking maybe here. You know, the one thing that people are sort of depending on now is that Andrew Cuomo will lead the charge for ethics reform in the same way he said he was going to do when he ran for the first time, but hasn't really produced. So wouldn't you think that if he was there, if he was a little worried about Preet and what Preet might do to him, that he would get out there and do ethics reform?
Yeah, or even if he's not worried about what Preet might do to him, that he would recognize that these two verdicts, and the governor has said it himself, these two verdicts are a call for fundamental change in Albany. Now, in saying that, the governor has pointed his own finger at the legislature and said that it is the legislature that has been the barricade, that the legislature has been obstructionist, whenever the chance for fundamental ethics reform, campaign finance, you know, public financing of campaigns, that kind of thing has been proposed. Now, the governor has shown an amazing ability to arm twist, to use all the various powers of the executive that are available to him to effectuate change when it's something he really, really, really wants. You know, we saw that in 2011 in the legalization of same-sex marriage, which is recognized as kind of the civil rights, social policy high point of his administration. He has also managed to get things like the Startup New York Initiative, like the Regional Economic Development Councils, like his property tax, you know, a sort of flexible freeze or cap. But fundamental ethics reform has eluded him.
So he's talked, for example, Casey Siler, about doing away with the so-called LLC loophole, and where money can be funneled, enormous amounts of money can be funneled into campaigns, including his.
More than anybody else's.
And what does he say about that?
He says he wants to do away with it. He says that he wants to see an end to this loophole in state law that allows entities that control lots of limited liability companies, LLCs as they're referred to, that essentially makes them individuals in terms of campaign finance donation limits. So, as we've discussed before, Alan Chartok individual can only give X amount, but Alan Chartok that controls 10 LLCs, Chartok Co. LLC, AC LLC, can give 10 times that amount.
Right.
And that is the device that is used most vigorously by a real estate development company called Glenwood Management, which, as I mentioned earlier, You saw people in the Silver and Skelos cases that overlapped. Glenwood Management personnel are chief among them. They are the biggest political donors in the state. They are the governor's most generous donors, as well as the most generous donating entity to Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and Controller Tom DiNapoli as well, I believe.
So when this money spigot shuts off, people are going to have to go out and really scramble.
Yeah.
They have
yes.
to get some money there.
Or they're going to have to learn to run their campaigns with less money, perhaps.
So Casey Siler, let me ask you this. You're around all the time. You talk to legislators all the time. Look, I get on this, our airwaves, all the time, and I say again and again and again, there are so-called bad legislators and so-called good legislators. And the so-called good legislators, we're always saying, don't put, you know, mud on the good legislators. Wait a second. These are the same good legislators who elect the people who are the bad legislators. And so is there any appetite for really making major ethics changes from the bowels of the legislature?
Well, it depends. That's a very gastrointestinal analogy you just made there. I think it depends on whose stomach you're talking about. Are you talking about the general public's stomach? If so, polls suggest that people recognize that corruption is a serious problem. The difficulty for achieving reform is that the fixes are often so technical, so hard to explain. You know, we could spend hours talking about, for example, redistricting reform, which was very much, very much debated 3-4 years ago at the beginning of the governor's term. The LLC loophole debate is simple on its face, but complex kind of when you drill down into it. Many people on the other side of that argument say, if you're going to constrain businesses, private businesses in that way, should there be a similar constraint for elements of law that allow unions to multiply the force of their giving, for unions to become real money bombs in many campaigns, usually on the side of Democrats as well. But what it really comes down to is will. But I want to get back to the question you raised about bad apples. I would ask you to consider the fact that the past four leaders of the state Senate have all faced federal corruption charges. Three of them have been convicted. That is Dean Skelos, a Republican, Malcolm Smith, a Democrat, John Sampson, also a Democrat, and of course, before that, Joe Bruno, who was the Republican majority leader, was convicted on federal charges, though the Honest Services statute was pruned back by the U.S. Supreme Court. And Bruno was ultimately acquitted. But still, I think that Bruno, it's fair to say, was dirtied up very much by that very long prosecution. So just consider the fact that not all of those leaders were arrested or convicted while they were leaders, but they were at one point majority conference leaders of the state Senate. That is 4 out of 4. I would suggest then that the problem is not simply a personal one, that it is rather systemic. I think that is what, that's the case that U.S. Attorney Preet-Bharara is making.
So my thing is, how do you stop it? Now, there are solutions. Solution number one, which I hate, by the way, is make them full-time and double their salary or give them a lot more money. That's ridiculous. You don't want to reward bad behavior, and that, to me, rewards bad behavior. There are two that I know would work, but legislators would have no appetite because it would involve constitutional amendments. One of them is, you know, initiative and referendum, meaning that the people get enough signatures on anything and then they could pass it. We have it in my state of Massachusetts, and it works most of the time. It has a few problems with it. And then the second, you know, idea are term limits. It works extraordinarily well in New York City, except when Mike Bloomberg did his thing and got himself an extra term.
Yeah.
But term limits are another thing that would make great sense. I don't think this legislature has any appetite for either.
Well, all of those are big constitutional lifts that would take many, many years to kind of put in place. New Yorkers in 2017 will have the chance to vote on whether or not there ought to be a constitutional convention where some of the things you have just addressed could be fashioned together as constitutional changes and proposed for a subsequent vote of the public.
Could be, but won't be.
Well, it's going to be a big question as we move toward November of 2017, where that will, once again, according to the state constitution, be put forth automatically to voters. Now, those are all big things. There are several little things. You know, my friend Bill Hammond, who is now a freelance columnist for Politico, had an outstanding column in which he said, no, don't say that, we've done all we can. There are laws that could be proposed to make it illegal to engage in the kind of self-dealing that we saw in the Silver trial. There are also laws that could be put forth to plumb, to render far more transparent the kind of vast pools of money that Silver was tapping into, for example, on the healthcare side, to benefit this mesothelioma doctor who was funneling patients to the law firm where Silver was of counsel, resulting in hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, in legal fees that federal prosecutors were able successfully to characterize as bribes and kickbacks. So saying that there, and of course, as we've discussed, the elimination of the LLC loophole, which is a factor in so many of these cases. So there are things that can be done on the more minor level that don't necessarily require that type of long-term constitutional fix.
Casey, I'm disgusted. I mean, really disgusted. You have Silver getting arrested and convicted, tried and convicted in the assembly. Who do they?
Oh, you mean Silver in the assembly?
Assembly, yes.
Yeah, the assembly was hands off.
Pause.
Yes. Okay.
In the assembly.
Yes.
Okay. And the reason I'm disgusted is that these same guys in the assembly who should be going out and figuring out ways to clean things up elect Boss Hasty of the Bronx to be the next guy up. Well, young Flanagan is not exactly the twin brother of Dean Skelos. He's pretty close out there. So they go and get another sort of lookalike for the Senate president in the Senate. So there's no appetite for change.
Well, you're right. I mean, both of those lawmakers have said, geez, we're open to hearing about ideas for reform, but we think there are lots of laws on the books right now. And also they say, well, geez, we just passed all of these things after the Silver arrest.
That aren't gonna work,
and we all know. Well, the jury is still out, as it were, here's one thing about both Hasty and Flanagan. Both of them have said, I'm not going to take outside income. And that is a big change from, I think, every legislative leader, if not going back into time immemorial, at least as far back as modern political history. You've never had two majority leaders who have abjured outside private income.
Big deal. Okay, but
might be cosmetic, might not be.
Yeah, but I need to know what the big changes are. Now, into all of this come a group called the Traitors by me, who are the four Democrats who have aligned themselves.
Five
Democrats now, yes, who have aligned themselves with the Republican majority in the state Senate. And one of them, Tony Avila, they gave him a little bit of sauce. And they said, okay, you're going to be the chairman of the Ethics Committee, parentheses, don't hold any hearings. Don't do anything.
This is fascinating. This is something I wrote about this week. really in response to something that came up in the trial of Dean Skelos, where Tony Avella of Queens, a senator, member of the IDC, the most recent addition to the Independent Democratic Conference, by the way, at the beginning of the 2015 session, he was made the chairman of the Ethics Committee of the Senate. Now, the Ethics Committee of the Senate has not held a meeting in at least 5 years, but most people say it really hasn't met in something like a decade or maybe even two decades. Now, committees only exist for two reasons: to hold investigations or to approve legislation, right? Or to consider legislation.
Or they have an oversight
to move it along.
Function. Yeah.
Yeah, right, to hold investigations. That either oversight function, standing committees, I believe almost all standing committees have a responsibility to consider legislation. Goodness knows there is ethics legislation that moves through the chamber. Now, there is some dispute as to whether or not the Ethics Committee is actually empowered to consider legislation. Okay, so if that's taken off the table, that means it has an oversight role. It has never met. Has it ever held an investigation? I don't know. No one will tell me. Tony Avella, as I said, the chair of the Ethics Committee throughout the 2015 session, now says, after the Skelos trial, that, oh, I wanted to hold a hearing on a piece of reform legislation that I was putting forward. And first I was told it was postponed, and then I was told that I was no longer the committee chair. And Avella, by the way, who refused to respond to my questions when I was working on this story, spoke to the New York Post, in which he said, geez, it was terrible. They booted me out as the chair of the committee and gave him another committee chairmanship.
Who'd they put in?
They put in Tom Croce from Long Island, a Republican. And Croce, who did respond to my questions, said that he hopes to introduce serious ethics legislation in the next session, and that he will start off the session by reaching out to Chuck Levine, who is the chair, basically his opposite number in the assembly, and hopes to really get something done.
And I take it as a great reporter that you are, Casey, and you are, I'm not being cynical here. You asked him, give us a hint of what that legislation might be.
No, you haven't gotten that far yet. He said significant legislation, so we will see what that is. Certainly, there's going to be significant legislation proposed, either proposed by Republicans or proposed by Democrats or proposed by the governor. Something is going to be offered up.
Because you have a serious statewide election coming up in which everybody realizes that the control of the state Senate is at stake.
Oh, the control of the state Senate is absolutely at stake, and Republicans are feeling the heat. Not only because of the fall of Dean Skelos, but also as Democrats are in the assembly, too. They are going to have to run. The 2016 elections will be the first ones after Silver's arrest, his fall, his conviction. They will have to answer for every picture they ever took with Sheldon Silver. I'm sure that the mailers, even as we speak, are being prepared by the opposition party. But Republicans in the Senate are particularly worried, not only because of the Skelos conviction and everything that came out about the way that Skelos was kind of using the conference, and in fact, as we were discussing, using the kind of bargain, the pact that they have with the IDC as a way to keep the Democratic conference fragmented. That turned up on wiretap recordings of conversations that he was having with his son. But also because it's a presidential year, this is a deep blue state. Presidential years bring out more Democratic voters,
sure,
which could make the difference in tight races where the future control of the Senate is going to be decided.
It will, because when Obama ran, a lot of Democrats came out. The next two years,
that is the only time that Democrats have taken control in the state Senate.
Right. So now we'll see what happens here. Look, is Cuomo in trouble with Preet Bharara? Do we know that?
No, we don't know that. What Bharara has said, he said in an interview on WCNY this week, was that he was not going to talk about, was not going to confirm or deny, nor deny any investigations that his office is conducting going forward, which is exactly as it should be. They didn't talk about, we got inklings of what the Silver prosecution was going to be about only about 5 weeks before it actually came down. We got inklings of what was going to be at issue, what turned out to be at issue in the Skelos case, really only about, I think, less than a week. It was probably more like, I think the stories broke maybe on a Friday that he was going to be arrested. And that, of course, happened on a Monday in early May.
Ace reporter Casey Seiler is answering our questions. Casey, you reporters have tried like crazy to get certain information out of the government. And sometimes you have to sue, you have to go to court, you have to beg. And there's been some legislation that has been around. Has the governor been supportive?
Yes and no is the answer to that question, Alan. You're referring to the same day, Friday, when the Skelos verdict came down. The governor was obligated to act on more than 70 bills that had hit his desk. You know, there's a deadline by which the governor is forced to act. He had midnight on that Friday to act. There were two that were of the biggest import, dealing with state freedom of information law. Both of them basically would have toughened up the sanctions when a public office, a public entity, does not respond, essentially obstructs or slow rolls a FOIL request from a member of the public.
FOIL is public information.
FOIL is a public, yeah. So in other words, if you want a document or I want a document or Joe Schmo wants a document, they submit a freedom of information law request, and there are certain timelines that the government, any government, whether it's your local sewer district or, you know, the executive chamber run by Andrew Cuomo, has to respond. Now, they can put you off. They can say, oh, we're still processing. Well, you know, we're going through the documents. But if at the end of that route, the agency or the office still is not responsive, there are legal sanctions up to and including payment of all legal bills by the plaintiff, who has to go to the trouble of a court appeal. The Times Union,
your paper,
my paper, being a paper with a lot of commitment to investigative journalism, has had a lot of luck in using state FOIL law and the appeals process. Well, I say a lot of luck. We shouldn't have to go to the appeals process, but we have in the past for things like compelling the city of Albany to disclose records about machine gun purchases that were made by cops back in the day, like Tommy guns. And also in getting the state legislature to disclose a granular detail about member items, the kind of political pork that used to be doled out in great cataracts, you know, from lawmakers to specific areas, you know, in their district, everything from, you know, a little league field to a healthcare entity that might be run by the assembly member's sister or cousin or something like that. It was real dark money, and the Times Union fought very hard to get that list out there, and we prevailed.
Mm. Our guest has been the amazing Casey Seiler. Casey, I don't know how you do it. Seems to me that to have this statehouse beat at a time when, you know, it's like walking through one of those hallways around Grand Central Station where somebody has urinated, to be perfectly honest.
Wait, before we end, I should say, I realized I did that long explanation of FOIL law and never said the governor vetoed both of those laws that would have toughened up the sanction process. But the next day, he signed an executive order that basically said agencies need to speed up the appeals process.
Because he knew he was getting hammered.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
but thank you for that vivid analogy of...
well, sure. It's my pleasure.
Bus station of state government.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So anyway, our guest has been Casey Seiler, the wonderful state editor and Capitol Bureau Chief of the Albany Times Union. Casey's also one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Casey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Alan.
And we'll see you all next week on the Capitol Connection.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.